Have you ever stepped into a room and it's just pitch black, you're feeling around, you know, can't see a thing, then click, someone flips the light switch, and bam, suddenly you can see everything. It's quite amazing, that sudden shift. That's what we're diving into today, the really fascinating world of light and shadow. We've got a great chapter here to guide us, and our goal, well, it's to sort of cut through everything and pull out the key ideas, the things you really need to grasp about how we see our world.
Exactly. We'll unpack how light actually makes things visible in the first place, how those everyday shadows pop up everywhere, and even touch on those huge celestial events like eclipses, which are really just giant shadows in space. You know, it's all about building that core understanding of vision and, well, how much light shapes our lives.
Okay, let's start right at the basics then. We're surrounded by light, but what is it, really? If you had to explain it simply, like, is it energy?
It absolutely is. At its heart, light is a fundamental form of energy. And crucially, it's the specific kind of energy that allows us to see. Hmm. Without it, yeah, we'd just be in darkness.
Right. And it doesn't just, you know, magically appear. Mm-hmm. Where does it all come from? The sun, obviously. But what else? Are there different kinds?
For sure. We generally split light sources into two main camps, natural and artificial. Natural sources are things that, well, naturally produce their own light. Think the sun, other stars, fire, even lightning during a storm. We call these luminous objects.
Luminous, okay.
Then you have artificial sources. These are the things humans have made to give off light: LED bulbs, candles, your phone screen, a torchlight, TVs, neon signs.
So things we've created.
Exactly. And it's important to remember, most things we see, like, say, this table, or even the moon, they're non-luminous. They don't make their own light.
Interesting point about the moon. We'll probably circle back to that. Okay, so we know what it is, where it comes from. How does it move? How does it get from the bulb to my eye? I remember reading something about rectilinear propagation. Sounds a bit complicated.
It does sound fancy, doesn't it? But it just means light travels in a straight line. Always.
Always straight.
Always straight. Think about sunlight streaming through a dusty window. You see those distinct beams, right? Or a flashlight beam cutting through the dark. Those are perfect examples. The light rays are just marching straight forward. It doesn't naturally curve or bend around things.
Okay, straight lines. So how does that connect to us actually seeing things? If the light just zooms past in a straight line, how do we perceive, say, a chair across the room?
Great question. It's not just about the light traveling to the chair. It's about what happens next. Those straight rays of light hit the chair, and then they bounce off it. They reflect.
Ah, reflection.
Yes. And it's those reflected rays, still traveling in straight lines, that then enter our eyes. Our brain takes that information, that pattern of reflected light, and processes it into the image of the chair that we perceive. Without that bounce back, no image.
Makes sense. So light travels straight, hits something, bounces off into our eyes. Right. Got it. But obviously light doesn't interact with everything the same way. Sometimes I can see right through something like glass. Other times it's completely blocked, like a wall. What's going on there?
Yeah, different materials handle light differently. We basically group them into three types based on how much light gets through.
Yeah.
First, you've got transparent materials. Think clear glass, clean water, maybe cellophane wrap.
Right, see-through stuff.
Exactly. Light passes through them almost completely. You get a clear view of what's on the other side. Then there are translucent materials. Things like frosted glass or maybe butter paper.
Okay, so they let some light through.
Precisely. Mm. Light gets through, but it's scattered and diffused. You can tell there's light, but you can't see details clearly. Good for privacy, like bathroom windows.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you have opaque materials. Wood, metal, a thick book, a brick wall. Even you and me.
Opaque. So no light gets through these at all?
Not a bit. They completely block the light. It either gets absorbed by the material or reflected off its surface, but none passes through to the other side.
And I guess that property, being opaque, is fee for the next thing we wanted to talk about, right? Shadows.
Absolutely crucial. This directly leads us to shadows. And it clears up something important. It's the opaque objects that form those distinct, clear shadows we usually think of.
Because they're the ones completely stopping the light.
Exactly. Transparent things don't really cast shadows, and translucent things might cast faint, fuzzy ones. But opaque objects, they create that definite dark area because the light is totally blocked.
Right. Like when you stand outside in the sun, you're opaque, so there's your shadow on the pavement. You see it all the time.
Precisely. A shadow is simply that dark patch formed when an opaque object gets in the path of light. It's the area where the light couldn't reach because the object was in the way.
So if I wanted to, say, make some shadow puppets on the wall for fun, what ingredients do I need? What are the absolute must-haves?
Ah, shadow puppets. fun. Okay, you need three essential things, no exceptions.
Blame on me.
One, source of light, a flashlight, a lamp, anything like that. No light, no shadow.
Okay, two, source of light, check.
Two, an opaque object. Your hand, a cutout shape, something that will actually block the light properly.
Opaque object, got it, like my hand.
And three, a screen or surface. Somewhere for the shadow to actually fall onto, like the wall or even a piece of paper.
Light source, opaque object, screen. Makes perfect sense. You need all three.
Take anyone away and the shadow disappears.
Now, shadows themselves have some interesting characteristics. You mentioned they're formed by blocking light, which leads to one I find kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Shadows are always black, right? No matter what color the object is.
That's right. Seems a bit weird at first, but it makes sense when you think about it. Color is about the light an object reflects. A shadow is the absence of light reaching the screen. Since there's no light there to reflect your eyes, it just appears dark or black.
Huh. Never really thought about why. Okay, what else?
Well, a shadow only shows the basic shape, the outline or silhouette of the object.
Right, you don't see the pattern on my shirt in my shadow.
Exactly. No details inside, just the contour. And the size of the shadow isn't fixed, it changes.
Oh, yeah. How so?
It depends on two distances. How far the object is from the light source, and how far the object is from the screen where the shadow forms.
Ah, okay. Like moving your hand closer to or further from the flashlight and making those puppets.
Precisely. Move your hand closer to the light, the shadow on the wall gets bigger. Move it closer to the wall, it gets smaller and sharper.
Cool. And there's another thing about shadows changing. Throughout the day, our own shadows change length, don't they? That's mentioned in the chapter too.
Yes, that's a fantastic everyday observation. Your shadow isn't the same length at 9 a.m. as it is at noon.
Why does that happen?
It's all down to the Earth's rotation and the changing angle of the sun in the sky. Think about it. Early morning, the sun is low on the horizon. It hits you at a low angle, casting a really long shadow behind you.
Right, long morning shadows.
Then as the Earth turns, the sun climbs higher. Around noon, it's almost directly overhead. That high angle means the light is hitting you more from above, so your shadow becomes very short, almost just underneath your feet.
And then it gets longer again in the evening as the sun goes down?
Exactly. Longest in the morning and evening, shortest around midday. Mm. It's a constant little dance between you, the Earth, and the sun.
It's amazing how these simple principles of light blocking and angles scale up. We see our little shadows on the ground. But these same ideas operate on a massive cosmic scale too, right? Explaining things like why we have day and night and even eclipses.
Absolutely. Let's zoom out. Think about the Earth itself. It's constantly spinning on its axis.
Okay.
The side of the Earth that's facing the sun gets lit up. That's daytime.
Makes sense.
The other side, the side facing away from the sun, is in the Earth's own shadow. That's nighttime. As we spin, different parts of the planet move into the light and then into the shadow. Create the cycle of day and night. It's a planet-sized shadow effect.
Wow, okay, so day and night are basically Earth's shadow. What about eclipses then? They sound more dramatic.
They are pretty dramatic. An eclipse happens when things line up perfectly. Specifically, when three celestial bodies, usually the sun, the moon, and the Earth, fall into a straight line in space.
A perfect alignment.
Exactly. And when that happens, one of them casts a shadow on another, or one gets blocked from view by another. It's like the universe is playing shadow puppets on a grand scale.
Okay, so there are different types, right? Solar eclipse first. What's the lineup there?
For a solar eclipse, the moon comes directly between the sun and the Earth.
Moon in the middle.
Right. So the moon blocks the sun's light, and the moon's shadow falls onto a small part of the Earth. If you're in that shadow path, you see the sun being covered up. This happens during the day, obviously.
And sometimes it covers the whole sun, sometimes just part.
Correct. A total solar eclipse is when the moon completely blocks the sun's face for a few minutes. It gets eerily dark. A partial eclipse is when it only covers a portion. And this brings up a really important safety warning from the chapter. You should never look directly at the sun during a solar eclipse, even a partial one.
Right, because the sun's rays are still incredibly strong, even if mostly blocked.
Extremely strong. Looking directly can cause serious and permanent eye damage. You need special eclipse glasses or viewers. Very important.
Okay, duly noted. Never look directly at a solar eclipse. What about the other kind? Lunar eclipse.
A lunar eclipse is when the alignment is sun, earth, moon.
So the Earth is in the middle this time.
Exactly. The Earth comes between the sun and the moon, and the Earth casts its shadow onto the moon.
Ah, so we see Earth's shadow covering the moon.
Precisely. This only happens when the moon is full, on the opposite side of Earth from the sun. A total lunar eclipse is when the entire moon passes through the darkest part of Earth's shadow, often making the moon look dim and reddish. A partial one is when only part of the moon goes through the shadow.
And these are safe to look at, right? Because we're just looking at the moon.
Yes, lunar eclipses are perfectly safe to watch with your naked eyes. You're just observing moonlight, which is reflected sunlight, being blocked.
Okay, so we have these alignments. Sun, moon, earth for solar, sun, earth, moon for lunar. But the moon goes around the earth every month, roughly. Why don't we get a solar eclipse every new moon and a lunar eclipse every full moon?
That's a really common question. It seems like they should happen all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The reason they don't is because the moon's orbit around the Earth isn't perfectly flat relative to Earth's orbit around the sun. It's tilted, just slightly, about 5 degrees.
Oh, okay. That tilt.
Yeah. So most months, when the moon is new or full, its shadow passes either slightly above or slightly below the Earth for solar, or the moon passes slightly above or below Earth's shadow for lunar. Things only line up exactly right for an eclipse to occur maybe a couple of times a year when the sun, Earth, and moon intersect that orbital plane at the same time. It needs that perfect, precise alignment.
Wow. Okay, so it's that slight orbital tilt that makes eclipses relatively rare and special events.
Exactly right. Precision is key.
So let's quickly recap. We started with light just being energy that lets us see. We talked about where it comes from, natural things like the sun, artificial things like lamps, and how it travels always in straight lines.
Right. And how those straight lines bouncing off objects is how we actually perceive them.
Then we got into materials. Transparent lets light through. Translucent lets some through, but scattered. And opaque blocks it completely.
And it's those opaque objects that create clear shadows when they block the light path.
We need a light source, the opaque object, and a screen for that shadow to show up. And shadows are always black outlines, changing size and length depending on light angles and distances.
Mm-hmm. From our own changing shadows during the day?
All the way up to the massive shadows causing day and night and those incredible solar and lunar eclipses, which need that perfect tilted alignment to happen.
It really ties together, doesn't it?
Right.
This understanding isn't just, you know, abstract physics. It's about really seeing the world differently, noticing your shadow length, appreciating why you can see through a window but not a wall, understanding the mechanics behind a stunning eclipse. It connects everything.
It really does sharpen your observation skills. Okay, let's leave everyone with a final thought to chew on, something pulled from the material we looked at. We mentioned earlier that the moon is non-luminous, right? It doesn't make its own light.
Correct, unlike the sun.
Yet, on a clear night, it can look incredibly bright up there. So based on everything we've just discussed, light, how it travels, reflection, how we see things, why do you think the moon shines so brightly in our night sky? Something to ponder.